Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Oh my God, our guest is Zoe Ashton. Zoe Ashton is an actress, director, writer, producer. So I think I noticed her in Fresh Meat as well when she started in Fresh Meat. And that, oh, Deli cooking it up. And
bring some fat.
Yeah, I loved Fresh Meat. I thought her character was very smart, brilliant, beautifully written, as the writers who did Fresh Meat always were. It's more that she was, behind the scenes, she wrote a book. She started producing, she was directing, she did a lot of theatre work, she was getting plays put on. I started to really get interested in how she was having a career off screen, actually.
I just need to jump in here and just say, Makita's had a bit of a Zoe Ashton obsession for many years.
Yes!
And we did a thing.
No, I don't want to talk about it here.
So I'm going to tell her. But twice, just in case it doesn't work there.
It will work.
She's so bossy.
I basically wanted to just pick her brain and be near her, which I suppose could be a stalker.
I think that's actually almost the definition of illegal.
Just wanted to be near her, Tom.
But she's a brilliant young woman.
Yes, I also, can I just say, I now call her a friend, so that's what I'm saying, like, just hold it down, Nicole. But yeah, she's brilliant, and she's had a whole crazy 5 years.
Her trajectory.
Her trajectory's been amazing, and then she had a baby, and she's in one of the biggest films of her career, the Marvel film.
Oh, yeah, it's like a sort of, I feel like it's a sort of other level of, I don't want to call it just success, because she's incredibly successful and she's achieved so much already. But it's another level of
visibility,
acting,
yeah.
Recognition when you're in those Marvel movies, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually, I think Zoe Ashton might be one of those people that is like, you know so much that she's done, been in, been part of, but maybe don't know her name.
Right.
And it's kind of crazy because she's sort of done so much. And we're the same age. I'm 3 months older than her.
But we're really looking forward. She's a fantastic young woman.
It's going to be lovely. I just wanted to come around and give her a massive hug and have some good times.
And some good food.
I'm very aware that you've got some really fancy shoes on and I'm wearing all these.
I decided to be fancy for Zoe.
Hello, beautiful.
You made it. You made it. You're not ready for what Mama's cooked.
Oh my God.
Well, it's quite
gosh.
Interesting. What direction? I don't even know why it went like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
gone a bit Irish.
It's
hearty and it's soothing. We've got pork chops, really great organic free range, amazing pork chops.
Heaven.
Fried apples, cider gravy, cabbage with some chili and some shallots and stuff running through it.
Oh.
Kind of quite Caribbean. It tastes a bit like corned beef and rice, but it's actually just the cabbage.
Oh my goodness.
And then mashed potato so we made the mashed potato. These are the crispy skins. So we made jacket potatoes, hollowed them out, and then put them through the ricer, and then crisped up the skins. So you've got crispy, salty skins on the top. And that's your lot, mate.
Deli doesn't fuck about, right?
No, Deli does not, and neither do I. So here, let me give you this spoon.
This is actually...
Go. Help yourself to some pork.
I haven't had mum mashed potatoes in a while.
This is beyond my
wildest. I'm with you on this.
You're
I'm
quite
like,
excited.
Oh,
Makita going straight to the potato.
I'm going to go for a chop.
It it is interesting, this thing we actually spoke about just briefly a second ago.
Yeah.
I just find so many young mothers, when I speak to them, feel really like they get a bit hoist by their own petard, like stuck in this some weird character that they've seen, that they feel that they have to build for themselves. I think the outside pressure on being this Instagram mum or, you know, like visible mother.
I don't.
It's so awful.
Visible mothering. I mean, I feel like I'm exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Which is, I love all the people who are out there, like, adding to the narrative of new motherhood in this really, like, disarming, like, candid way. I'm like, oh, oh God, that's so funny, actually. That really helped me. Yeah. That person being really open about that thing, I'm glad they did it. Maybe I'll do that when I'm a mum. As soon as I become mum, I was like,
I'm going to keep that.
Shut up. Give it to myself. But also, I don't feel the need to speak yet. But the listening has gone on to another level.
Other people's advice.
Other people's advice, other people's experiences, my mother's experience of mothering.
It's interesting, you immediately see your mother differently when you become a mother.
Immediately. And, kinda. You know, there's painful truths and there's, you know, happy things as well. I just don't know why we're talking to anyone under the age of, like, 60 about anything. I'm just like, I don't know anything.
Right.
Really, I know some things and I'm proud of the things that I know. Mm. But when you actually are in a position that I'm in right now where you're like, I'm sort of halfway between woman and it's sort of this new territory completely where you are going, I'm learning from scratch. I have absolutely nothing in the toolbox that I can use to pull out for this. So this is totally new. Mm. But also, I am Earth. I am ancient.
You know? Yes, I've given birth. I've become a mother.
Yeah. Like, so it's like you're like brand new green, like little bud and also huge mountain.
I'm meeting at the same time. What a bloody revolutionary feeling to have.
Like, yeah.
I get what you mean by inhabiting a completely new space. And I think it's funny that we're talking about age and then new mother, because Zowie's saying, I'm kind of leaving youth and going into a new stage. Yeah. I think that people felt like that at 27, and we get to kind of feel young till 40 now. And actually, that's very not true. The experience. I mean, you lot just always felt young, but I think we kind of get longer now.
Very true.
People now say 40's not even that old, but very 20 true. Years ago when I was 20, 40 was
old. 40 was old. 40
not just because I was 20, that's what the world said.
Yeah, because people died earlier. So the proportionate amount of life you expected to have left after 40 wasn't that much.
No.
I'm 60, so 60 was like you knocking on. You know what I mean?
But then
do you need some help, love? People do get a bit like that with me, and I was saying yesterday, I quite like it sometimes.
Yes, you know.
People go, just shall I get that for you? I'm like, yes, sure.
Love is attention, like actually.
Uh-huh. Want me to carry that for you? Absolutely, absolutely.
And
if you could just put it there, that would be lovely.
The L'Oreal. Not why you're helping me.
But I think it really is interesting to think about. We are quite, I feel like we're the lucky ones. Because we got a kind of roughneck of the late 80s, early 90s, early noughties. But we still get this time where I know, weirdly, strangely, as a broadcaster, I know I've only just begun and I've already had a 24-year career. And that is me, but also the world is open in a different way.
You're right. We stand on the shoulders of so many, don't we, who came before, including your beautiful mother. The fact that you and Helen Mirren are now in an ad that is sending the message to me.
I mean, how mad is that?
You know, it's all good, we're good, but particularly that it's you and Helen, not just Helen, is definitely, like, on the more hopeful side for me, for the future.
Things are changing, things are opening up. I know that, you know, in terms of, I was talking to this brilliant actress yesterday called Tolly Stedford, who she came down, I did a book signing, she came down, I was talking to her, and we were talking about, she was going, thank you for being so visible.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about how important that stuff is, and that you can't underestimate it. We've probably spoken about this before, but It's like when I see, I still get emotional. I walk past H&M, there's like a young dark-skinned black girl in the advert, and I get a bit choked up still.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's only a few years that this has like been that, happening.
I cried like buying your black Santas.
Oh, did you?
Because it's that, like you're saying, yeah. you sometimes don't know the lack until you're in that moment of healing.
Don't know you're hungry till you get the food.
You don't know you're hungry till you get the food.
Yeah, but that's good. That's
don't know where
that's
that came
good.
From.
I mean,
that's good.
Alternative spin-off podcast.
You don't know you're hungry till you get
fab.
But it's true, isn't it?
Do you remember? And then you're like that.
Yeah.
Zari, do you remember when you had your screening of Mr. Malcolm's List?
I do.
And you were heavily pregnant with your son.
I was, and I didn't get a photo with you that night.
No, but it was hectic for you.
It was hectic.
Because you were, 8 months or something, like properly pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a screening of a film that was a period drama with an ensemble cast of black, brown, white, lots of different kinds of people.
Yeah.
And that might not seem like a big thing, but when we first got there, I was like, I wonder why Zowie's done this period drama. This is quite an interesting thing, because I didn't feel like you'd done something like it before. And me and our mutual friend Zayze, you know Zayze,
yeah,
we were all talking, and Zowie said, no, this is so important for us to be seen in places like this. And it's just something like as simple as a period drama, which is like a sort of fabric of British entertainment.
Yeah.
To not see us in those has made an impact on my life. To see that film, I was like, oh, this does look different. Of course there's the Bridgerton effect, of course. But it's still, one show does not fix it. To keep going. I'm just interested.
It does.
I thought it was very interesting. That really stayed with me that you said there's a very powerful reason that we've done this. It's not just to do a romantic comedy.
I've literally never felt so radical than when I was looking back at myself in the mirror in like curls and a bonnet and a corset.
Yeah.
I was like, this is punk.
Yes.
This is the new radical revolutionary wave for me thinking about my career, because it was so layered, guys. Honestly, like, I'm really glad you brought it up, Makita, because it was like deep and the film is like frothy and lovely and amazing and maybe even somewhat soporific. You could watch it and be like...
No,
I'm so happy. Nothing bad happened.
Yes, it's very gentle.
I'm ready to go to my bed.
Everything you want those films to be.
Yes,
gentle, wholesome, funny,
and yet underneath romantic. Underneath that, the process was so different and not negative, just layered, like deeply layered. So, like the first time I read the script, I was sort of in this space where I was kind of comparing it maybe to other rom-coms, you know, just finding that modern day anchor as to what my inroad was going to be. It's kind of like Bridget Jones. It's kind of like My Best Friend's Wedding,
right,
and these other like revenge rom-coms from the 90s, early 2000s. I'm just going to, you know, find this like completely modern day context for how to get under the skin. And then of course you have to then start doing the research, the history, the reality of the period and all the rest of it. But then what you also have to do is like find yourself in it, because you always have to do that. There's all the outside stuff that you do as an actor, the research, and then you have to go, where's my heart, what I call heartline to the character.
Right.
And quite honestly, I was suddenly like, this is an immigrant story.
Right.
This woman in 1818 London, who's terrified of not assimilating properly, who's terrified of being ostracized from society, who's so worried that she's going to put a foot wrong and then suddenly be right at the bottom of this sort of social pecking order that she's tried so hard to climb. I was like, this is kind of my mum's story.
Wow.
Because so there
she's
was suddenly
somewhat
all
the villain
these...
in the film. Not the villain, but kind of stirs it up.
She's the stirrer.
She's the stirrer.
Yeah.
But that's deep.
It was so deep. Mm. And then there were moments where I was having to say, you know, lines like, you know, this is England.
Right.
And this is English society.
This is how it works.
And if you scorn me, I'm done.
Mm.
And of course, there could be an actor who plays that with absolutely no subtext going on in their mind necessarily at all. But for me, and I know some of the rest of the cast, there were just these moments where it was like, this is so much deeper.
And I think that we call it accidental politics. Obviously, that wasn't accidental, but having that kind of subtext in those kind of spaces is really, I mean, there's you know, there's docudrama, there's all the sorts of things where we can explore migrant stories and diaspora and multicultural worlds and all the worlds that we come from and the way that our world lives and works and all of that.
Yeah.
But actually, to also do it within that kind of framework is really important because it doesn't make it this story about other people.
Yeah.
It makes it a story about the fabric of the world that we live in. And I'm always 100%. Saying this country is a country of migrant people, whatever colour you are. You know, and most people don't... I'm not like ancient Britons, are they? They're like French and Dutch and Spanish and Italian and Irish and, you know, people come from all over everywhere.
That's why it's so crazy to me when sometimes there's this outcry when we are diversifying this particular genre of the period drama. There's this outcry of like, historical accuracy. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, but did we not have Australians playing like English monarchs? Did we not have like Americans? Yeah. Like, stepping in and
And also, what did you find out in your research about the actual facts of that historical time, which was black people were there in society in different ways?
I ended up going so far back that I started to listen to fantastic podcasts and read great, you know, books about the black Romans.
Oh, so
you know,
interesting.
I'm like, this is so crazy. Okay, the Regency England is like, okay, great.
Black
I'm
Romans.
Seeing black princes, I'm seeing black kings, seeing black, like...
Open up the door.
Soldiers, inventors of very historical machinery. But also, one of the most moving things was the joyfulness. You know, I've done a lot of gritty stuff in my time, my career, which I love, actually. You know, I absolutely adore, like, the gritty BAFTA side of it. We call gritty BAFTA.
Gritty BAFTA.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah.
I know.
No bra. Yeah. Lips are dry.
No bra acting.
Don't cream your skin. Skirt. Just leave
Don't
it. Just leave
it.
Is that dreams of a life?
That's more of the dreams of a life side. But the joy that I got from doing these scenes with these actors was, again, also the radical thing. I mean, you know, black joy is a sort of social media invented phrase that we sort of throw around, but I love it.
Yeah.
You two are an extreme example and guiding light of black joy for me.
Oh.
And I was just like, I'm messing around. I was like, this is what my peers have been doing all these years in these dramas. It's just like horsing about, having a brilliant, light, joyful time.
Well, this is, and being able to be a frothy comedy, and not having to always be like, and then she became a prostitute.
And then it went terribly.
That's what happens to black women. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, they're very true.
So that was radical.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Before me, because my whole thing is that I started at 15. And I was like, I think Zowie was younger than me.
I started age 6.
Oh my goodness.
In a show called Jack and Nori.
You were in Jack and Nori?
We're taking it back. I was in Jack and Nori in one episode. And actually, it started when I wrote this book ages ago. And it sort of was kind of little chapters from my life and career.
Yes.
And I sort of revisited this as a chapter. I was basically a six-year-old girl playing the character of six-year-old girl.
Epic.
And big reach then.
Big reach. Yeah, yeah.
Method.
You know. I'm really going method, wasn't
I? I mean, like, this feels wrong.
This feels wrong.
It's like, I don't know, Mum. I just feel like it's meant for me. It just feels good.
But that was like a big deal. It was like BBC, and they used to send you a letter saying thanks so much for like agreeing to play six-year-old girl. we really look forward to seeing you. Yeah, I've still got it.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
Did you love it? Did you love being
I've
on
been
set?
Doing this? I did. I think there's something so strange about young kids who know what they want to do.
Right.
And I very much wasn't like a stage school kid. And actually, my brilliant teacher, Anna Scher, I don't know if you've...
Who just passed away. Brilliant woman.
Absolutely. And this was a stage school that was for kids that didn't have money.
Didn't have necessarily even an ambition to act, but just wanted to gain confidence and communication skills and like...
That's such a nice starting point, isn't it?
Oh, it was
rather
amazing.
Than, I want to be famous. You know what I mean?
You literally walked in. I met up with one of the other people that I grew up with in that school, Reggie Yates. And he reminded me that there used to be a sign above the door as you walked in saying there is no such thing as star or fame.
Oh,
and that was the rhetoric of that place. It's like you come to act, you come to learn. Anna was a self-proclaimed integrationist, an Irish Jew who had a picture of Martin Luther King on one side and a map of Africa and a, you know, Gandhi quotes on another wall.
What a place.
You know, map of Ireland.
What a beautiful thing for a kid.
It was just absolutely amazing. And she encouraged individualism and basically activism. Like whenever I used to sort of put my hand up and ask a question or speak, I don't know why she called me this, but she used to go, oh, there she is, my little activist.
Aww.
I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Has it got something to do?
Because you're from acne.
Back to acne again.
But that was the great thing about Anna. She didn't like sugarcoat anything for, you know, the young ones. It was just all kind of... this huge like learning curve, and I went home and be like, "What's an activist?" And
Kathy Burke went there, didn't she? Amanda Mealing, who's my dear, dear, great, great sister friend, she went there. Linda Robson, Pauline Quirk,
the list of people.
Dexter Fletcher, Daniel Kaluuya.
There you go. It's very interesting to hear you say she believed in individualism and activism and to bring a child's mind and soul to life.
Yeah.
And you can feel that in the people that went through those doors because they have a drive and a kind of sense of self and purpose that isn't really present in other states. Most state schools sort of knock that out of kids.
Yeah.
And her, that man of share seems to have done absolutely the opposite. So cheers to her.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
I think we should just
to the good ladies.
What a thing to
the good lady
and to put in the world. What
to the good lady.
To the great teachers of our world.
So she cries all the time now.
I want to have a bit of a cry. But the other thing was, you know, she would stop classes for any news in like current events. So I remember the week Stephen Lawrence was murdered. We had no class. We just went in, and whether you were 8 or 18, we just talked about how we felt.
About what had happened.
About what had happened and what it meant. And I really remember a moment where there had been in the newspaper an instance where a young black boy had gone to audition for the new Milky Bar Kid and had been turned away. And again, she was like, we're not having class today. We need to talk about why this is, you know, wrong. And Reggie was saying the other day, he was like, Sal, like, think about it. She didn't used to sort of preface it with any, this
trigger
is an
warning.
Important conversation. Already trigger warning.
Trigger warnings be damned.
And she was just like, this is the world. What do you think? Eight-year-old, hey, tell us your emotion.
That's
and he was
great.
Like, that's all seeped in.
That's amazing. What a gift.
Yeah.
Should we talk about your Zowie obsession now?
In a minute. Okay, I'll talk about the Zowie obsession. So we did a McVitie's job, a campaign. It was great.
It was a mental health
thing called,
about talking.
Be kind to your mind.
Be kind to your mind.
This is about 4 years ago. Basically, I wanted my career back, Zowie. And
we can talk about the Makita Sons.
Makita Sons.
Which I'm obsessed with.
Makita Sons. renaissance. Beyonce is having her renaissance. Makita's having a Makita's. I like it.
Thanks, Alex.
So in the middle of this, so we was just us chatting over biscuits, basically. And then there were some questions they gave us. And one of the questions was, who do you really admire? Do you think is amazing?
And I said, I don't want that because I really don't know. And she said, well, there is someone you won't shut up about at the moment. And I said, what's Ari Ashton? She was like, yes. Yeah. I really respect that she is producing and directing and writing. I just love that you were always doing something else and using the fact that you'd had this lengthy career of so many different things and using it to just kind of have autonomy in different things. And it felt like you had freedom and you were doing really well at everything you touched. I was just like, this chick is killing it.
And fire.
And you just looked great. I was just obsessed.
Wow. And then the second question.
Gosh, I love
and then the second
this.
Question went, so which person, living or dead, would you like to talk to? She went,
Sally Ashton.
Sally Ashton. And I went, get a bit creepy now, Rikita. Get a little bit creepy.
I was like, I just want to be near her.
It literally means everything to
she's
me.
She's like, stop telling that story.
No,
Mom,
but for you to say to me that you see what I'm doing and what I've done in the last 3 years.
I've always seen it.
It means so
from
much
Pop
to
World
me.
To now. Like, I feel like there was some unspoken code between like anyone, Brown essentially, who was trying to navigate worlds that were not necessarily feeling hugely open. That was very real. I remember the cute, like, baby doll dresses that you used to wear, and I'd be like, and the loafers, I'd be like, I could never pull that off. Oh, can I pull that off? I'm going to try and pull it off. I will not leave it alone because it was
I
so
think because you're the same age as well.
Yes.
You're probably watching each other, like, yeah. Oh, she, because you know, you could,
that's
like,
what happens, isn't
you
it?
Look a little sister-y, the two of you, do you know what I mean? So it's like, this girl looks like me.
I wouldn't assume
she's the same age as
thank
me.
Thank you.
Me
yes.
too, thank you so
I love
much.
That. Sorry.
I want to talk about Broadway.
Oh, yes, yes. You. So now we know about Anna Sharon, kind of that experience.
Oh, and what my so, gosh. And that does put your career and your work into context, actually, that you have that, yes, as a foundation stone, that work that you did with Anna Sharon, with all
absolutely.
Those, with all your peers as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just
yeah.
you, it's like you and a whole bunch of other people. This is how you're going to go out in the
yeah.
world and pursue artistic endeavor
yeah.
and creative thought and process and all of that. What
yeah.
brilliant, brilliant building blocks. And then you have this amazing work, because we've been Googling you, basically. This is how you do research now, Googling. But we've been looking you up. Looking at it, it's like, gosh, she's done so many interesting things.
Yeah.
And each thing takes you a next step, next step, next step, next step. But you always seem to take...
Thank you.
You make really good choices.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that's very important, because it's so easy. We were talking to Miss Anne Harriman the other day.
Oh,
2 days ago. He's
just
brilliant.
Divine.
Just
divine.
But he said, oh, it's so important
champion.
For black and brown people to not feel grateful.
Yeah.
It's not about, it's like when you're in the room, they think, oh God, I'm in the room. It's like, right now I'm in the room. What am I going to do next?
Next.
What thread do I want to pull at? What choice am I going to make? What steps am I going to make? What do you say?
Dream bigger, jump higher.
And you seem to be a person who embodies that, Zoe, really, honestly.
I am taking this all in because I feel the opposite.
Do you?
Really? What the last kind of few months of motherhood?
When I hear you guys saying this to me, it was just so lovely. I never feel that way.
Mm. What do you mean? You know, I mean,
isn't
you'd be a bit of a dick if you sat
maybe
around going,
you
hey,
would.
Here
maybe
I am.
You
know?
Yeah, but you've got to be able to look at what you've done and who you are and the things you've done because of who you are. Like,
yeah.
It's so important. And, I mean, for instance, the fact that you're in now the new Marvel film.
Excuse me.
Which okay. is so next level.
Excuse me.
I'm
saving that bit.
We're saving that
it's the sequel to Captain Marvel. I'm obsessed with all those Marvel films. Films, right? Like, so we're going
to
come back.
We'll get there. But
second.
Broadway's still huge thing to do. Go to America on that
Broadway
level.
Broadway was huge. Well,
did it feel big?
It felt big because, like you were saying just now about choices and maybe how it looks like I make my choices. Yeah, there's been really huge periods of time in my career where I've said no to a lot of stuff.
Right.
I suppose I look at my CV and I go, oh, there's that little period of time where you went off to write because the roles that were coming in were so, like, reductive or not putting the right message out into the world, essentially.
Yeah.
If I could put the list of things that I've said no to up against my CV, people would be like, you effing crazy.
Oh,
it's really better than your actual CV,
oh,
love.
Really?
But in lots of ways, I think I always felt like I could only do things that were just energetically adding rather than taking
away. That sit right in your spirit.
That sit right in my soul. Mm. And so that meant saying no to a lot, because it's taken a long time for this pendulum that we see swinging now.
I mean, really.
To swing. And so going off and doing other things was, I think, partly my interest and my taste level. Mm. But sometimes it was literally like survival,
yeah.
or a survival instinct taking me to a new opportunity. Like, I ended up hosting a late night experimental film show called Random Acts.
Did you? Yeah, I did
for like 3 seasons. It was on at midnight.
Oh my god!
That's not advancing one's kind of profile or career.
But you just fancied it.
I was asked to do it, and I was like, "This is perfect," because actually, the more narrative-driven stuff isn't feeling that vital at the moment, whereas this really is. And they'd sort of hit a bit of a wall with it, and then I started hosting it and got really involved with like so many aspects of the writing of it and the presenting of it.
Yeah.
And suddenly, instead of like 8,000 views, young up-and-coming filmmakers were getting like 8 million views
on
YouTube. And
it
became like a proper launching pad for new filmmaking talent.
I think it is adding to your CV and your toolkit and everything else. And I've done hundreds of things that, like, literally under the radar, no one even noticed. But for me, everything you do, I always say to Makita, everything is something.
Everything is something.
Yes. Everything is something.
Yes.
So everything you do, do it to the best of your ability. Give it everything you've got.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to get and gain and what growth you're going to find in each thing. Even if you're working, I love working in a bar. I love working in a bar.
Do it all right. Do it all well.
You
do good.
No, yeah, you don't know. And actually, both my parents started out as teachers. And
oh, did they? Yeah. My mum's a teacher.
And so there are times still to this day where they will get approached by people, you know, up in their 50s and be told that if it hadn't been for them, their lives would have gone in a completely different direction.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, someone recently approached my dad and was like, thank you so much for believing in me.
Oh, my God.
I can't remember which school it was. It was, you know, one of these comprehensive schools, sort of East London, Northwest London.
So they both worked in comprehensive schools around East and Northwest.
Yeah. And he was like, you gave me this new way of thinking about sort of the passion that he had. I think it was in engineering. I was dyslexic. Everyone's writing me off. It's all because of you, that moment. And my parents are very humble. They're like, no, surely not. But they're like, no, really? Like, there was this path, and then there was this path, and you came along, and I got to go down that way. So,
straight up.
It's like
the road less traveled.
Exactly as you're saying, the road less traveled is my favorite poem of all time. You're right. You don't know what energy you're putting out and the effect.
And it's so important to bring your whole being to everything that you do.
From the outside, people, and also having such a lengthy career filled with so much, people from the outside would say life's pretty great for Zoe Ashton. It does seem like there's a lot of light in your life right now. How does that affect the work with work? Yeah, what is it like when your life is light and fulfilled and satisfied?
You have to go and get it. You have to go and get your life, I think, especially as an actor. But going all the way back to the Broadway conversation again, you know, I had quit acting before Broadway came along. I was just done. The pendulum hadn't swung.
Right.
We didn't have The Little Mermaid.
Right.
Reboot.
No, this is off the back of Fresh Meat ending, and that's like a long, lengthy job, and it was so huge and everywhere, and regular as an actor, you know.
Regular as an actor. But also, like, when you come out of an ensemble show that's been successful, it's a lottery of how to transform, how to Zawasance.
Yes.
Because people go, oh, surely you want to do the same thing over and over again,
not really.
Right? And you're like, no, I'm an actor. I'm not a
I'm not Vod.
I'm not like a mimic. Like, I don't want to do the same thing.
Vod on the stage. No, no.
Exactly.
Not
Vod
cartoon.
In Malcolm's List.
I'm not a cartoon. I'm a human being with aspirations and thoughts. And
it's and just their fear.
So it was hard to weirdly break out of Fresh Meat in lots of ways. But I just got to a point where I was like, there's not enough intention coming towards my intention from the industry that I'm in. So what do I do? And I just thought, follow the happy people.
Yeah.
Watch what they do. It was before we were talking about AI in any serious way. I was like, be AI. watch them assimilate their behaviour, right, and hope that you end up in the same place that they were. So,
and was that the theatre immediately?
Lots of people, no, were quitting jobs in acting, jobs in the arts, moving to Margate, which is a beautiful haven for
all. I know so many people who live there.
So basically just out there having a jolly, really. But it was like this thing where I was like, okay, you can see that people are quitting this industry, moving to a place that doesn't feel like every single one of your pennies has to go on, you know, rent or a night out or an event or whatever. Everyone's getting back to nature. People are starting families. People are starting new businesses filled with these like great mottos that we're throwing out today, you know, like live with intention, you know. So I did all of that and I stopped. And that's where I ended up writing my book. And the process of writing it was like a re-editing of my thoughts, feelings, like therapy, all these things that we're talking about that hadn't necessarily landed in one place because I hadn't given myself time to sit with them and look at them. And so I was really done. And then all the work that ended up coming after that was work I was meant for, was work that was suddenly infused with incredible people. I was suddenly part of systems that really functioned. Projecting that or something. So when I got to Betrayal, I was like, this is the happiest family that you could have. And we're doing a play called Betrayal. It's very, you know, dark. But the system was so beautiful. And I think we all did our best work. And I think we all ended up flourishing in our lives.
Yeah, in every way.
And all three of you, it was your first Broadway show, is that right?
So this is Tom Hiddleston, Charlie Cox, and Zoe.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean, what Tom, your baby father, the father of your child,
And we were never supposed to go, you know. Oh. We did it in the West End and we were like, it's been amazing, it's been great. And then, well, we were never supposed to do it even in the West End. Tom and I had done a reading at a gala to raise money for the charities that Harold Pinter supported in his life.
So it's a play by Harold Pinter, let's be clear. It's a play by Harold Pinter.
And we did this reading together at a gala of the central scene in that play. And everyone was like, oh, so you're rehearsing Betrayal? We were like, no, we're just not. We're just like, no, we rehearsed the scene, just did it.
Oh, so that's interesting. So you just, so the first thing you did with your with someone that you were going to have a whole huge part of your life with was something quite even intense. You didn't just like go for a quick drink or have some lunch. You're like, should we do this really intense scene from Betrayal, Pinter?
Yeah,
at a gala in front of people.
But I wonder if that reshuffling of the cards that I'd been doing just, you know, led me to one of my favourite playwrights, led me to one of my favourite directors, Jamie Lloyd, who directed it, led me to this new,
well, your favourite
literal
people,
new family.
No. Come now. Looking for family and made a family from that. That search in a way, but it's like, but it's not, it's about relinquishing the other shit, isn't it? It's about
you have letting to.
Go. Basically, I'm deciding I don't want to go to red carpet events anymore. There are other things that are feeding my soul that interest me more, that make me see a much more varied, unique, soul-fulfilling career.
Yeah.
And I don't want to need anything. I want to just feel free.
Mm-hmm. But and the thing is, you will go back to red carpet.
Of course.
And I went back to acting, but I had to give it that break because it was taking from the other things that I needed to really blossom in my life.
And you need to make space.
You have to make space.
That's it.
End of story. And I don't know if you guys believe in this hypersensitive new label or like
What is
Google diagnosis called hypersensitivity.
Well, where you just everything. Yeah, that's what, I mean, I'm a bit like, I mean, I that's why I was weak. Weeping at the restaurant that I didn't want to be in.
You're probably living in a body that divides up really simple things that lots of people just see like three or four options into like 25 options.
Right.
And that's where your, you know, genius comes from and that's where your flair comes from.
I just got to be happy. If I'm happy, then I can do good work.
Yeah.
If I don't believe it, then it's crap.
I think that's my
For
point.
Me and everybody around me.
And I was raised by this woman. So I think for me, when it starts feeling like not me, like not, and also because of the work I've done in the last 3 years on myself and like discovering faith in a new way and Oprah.
No joke.
I think that there's just something, I know it too quickly now when something doesn't align with my soul. I'm like, no, I feel it quick and I want to make a move quick. But also in a fun way. The last 3 years have been very like, it's time to learn the lessons and another challenge here. It'd be nice to go, I'm going to do this now because I want to. It's just that choice. And I can, and I don't need to be afraid to follow my spirit.
I need to say one thing about gratitude.
Oh, yes.
When I say you don't need to be grateful to be in the room, I mean you don't need to feel like people are doing you a favour.
Yeah.
I am eternally grateful for my life and the brilliant people and the beautiful things in it and the choices I get to make.
Yeah.
But I am also aware that I gave myself that power.
Absolutely. 100%.
Nobody gave me that power. Nobody told me that, well, my mum's pretty cool. But nobody, you know what I mean? Those rooms never told me that I could make elbow room for myself and all of that stuff. So I'm really grateful that I'm grateful to myself.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, and I am grateful to myself for being brave and, you know, taking a leap of faith never quitting. Also, like, you know, being prepared to live what some people would perceive to be the harder life. You know, not having any money, being a single parent, doing all that stuff. To me, that was a healthier, happier option than trying to cram myself or shape myself into something that didn't feel right for me. I just was never able to do that because of the way my brain and my spirit work. I'm just not that kind of person. I don't mean that in some sort of twatty way.
No, but it's the classic image of the, you know, the billionaire in their, you know, high-rise apartment staring into the middle distance.
On their own.
On every antidepressant going. And they literally have access to anything that they might want.
And us sitting in a little flat with
young,
like...
young child in a field with goats, right? You know, it's like,
that's me.
Tray of chicken wings and 20 mates having a great time.
Yeah. So,
put on some more James Brown.
Right. Zoe, I live on the water and, like, me and the swans have a better time than me at events right now. Yeah. My soul's not here, guys. I have nothing to give.
Do you remember bumping into each other at the
British Fashion Awards?
Awards,
red carpet. Absolutely. And
we were freezing in this scrum of people. And I literally turned around and you were there. And I think I said something like, I'm really not enjoying this.
No. We were like at the most glamorous bus stop in the world. It was like, me, Zoe, Demi Moore, Madonna. We're like, oh God. And it's just a very difficult process. Like, I mean, when you're in it and you're like, I'm hustling, I'm getting my picture, I've got repositioning to do. This is fun. I love getting dressed up. I had a great time the last few years and it's been beautiful to get my career back and have it feel so visual and have you say things like Makita
Songs.
It makes me feel like, right,
it's a t-shirt. Makita
Songs.
But it makes me feel like, okay, I did something, but that's okay. To go, and that was then, and this is now.
What's next?
I want to produce more. That fills my soul. I love directing. I have two really exciting new projects that I just want to dive into and bathe in. And I just like to be a producer who likes clothes rather than someone who's like being glamorous all the time. Doesn't feel close to my soul.
Also, you don't have to do one thing. Nobody is one thing. I've never done one thing in my life. I've always had a several plates spinning, and now I'm in a place where I've got a bit of, all, you know, empowerment in the industry that I work in. I can do a show about food, I can do a show about music, I can host the proms and Great British Menu and do a rally car drive across Asia with Nikita. And there are many parts of me. We are allowed to be many faceted.
And the messaging is so opposite to that. I think sometimes, especially in the UK, you know, there's this phrase that we've heard since we were born, like, oh, jack of all trades, master of none, is it? And
so
you're like,
bollocks.
Well, actually, there is part of our lineage that is about tribes and about finding tribes. And within that tribe, finding your place, you know, finding where you feel useful.
We were talking to Charlotte Mensah the other day, who's like that incredible hair rejuvenation artist. Charlotte was telling us about her grandma, who was like, she cooked, she made clothes for everybody, she knew how to fix shoes, she had like five or six, she's a hustler.
She helped the grandpa with like his business. Like you had to know everything. You had to be good at more than one thing. And because it wasn't about pursuing a dream and picking your vocation, it was survival. It was wanting to feel like you could look after anyone and yourself if necessary.
And it's not true that doing loads of different things means you don't master anything. I just think it's one of those.
It's just like a story.
It's a construct from somebody. I don't know who it's served.
Some untalented bastard.
Some dry piece of something. Some dry person who can only do one thing.
You can manage it, but we got this.
Sorry for you.
I think we're going to be okay. But I wrote this play a few years ago called For All the Women Who Thought They Were Mad that was on in Stoke Newington. But I bring it up because that play was sort of exploring lots of different things. It was too big to go into now. Black women, mental health, you know, black maternal care.
Yes.
Assimilation in the West if you are someone from, you know, the African diaspora. Anyway, I bring it up because when I wrote that play, people would just be like, well, why do you want to talk about this? Like, why have you structured the play this way? And I was sort of met with quite a hostile response sometimes when I was trying to get the play performed. So I had to really go back to something that I could sort of root myself in. And so I started to really research theatre on the continent of Africa. And actually, it's sad to find some of the research because there is very little known pre-colonialisation. But one of the main things that came through so viscerally to me is theatre was used as a way to solve problems. Mm-hmm. Theatre was a mechanism for, like, reaching out to your community and saying, like, what do we do about this thing? Right. And so audiences were supposed to interject and be involved. They could change the ending if they wanted to. You could, you know, call out the ending that you felt was right and the actors
One interesting way to discuss what's going on around you and in the world around you.
But I think that is, you know, probably in our DNA.
Yeah.
And so when you're being asked to just do or perform without
context,
without that context or without that why, it just, you just go, well, how will this serve the community? How will this make things better after I do the thing?
What does it leave behind? What is the point? What is the intention again?
What am I going to leave behind?
What am I doing?
Yeah. And if you do one thing, you go, it didn't happen there. And you go, well, I'll do this other thing and maybe it'll happen there. And okay, maybe it'll
happen there. Also, there are transferable skills. Like the things that made me a good singer and performer are the things that make me a good chef, are the things that make me a good broadcaster.
So
it's like
true.
It's like it's about being able to connect to something in yourself that means you are telling a truth that is right there and right then and tangible and really important for you in that moment, you know.
Guys, we have to talk about Marvel.
Oh my God, we have to talk about Marvel.
There's so much to talk about. We knew this was going to happen.
We've gone so over. We knew this was going to happen.
We've got to talk about this moment because it is a bloody moment.
And I'm a massive Marvel. I absolutely am obsessed, right? So Captain Marvel, I love. So tell me who you're playing. I'm Wagwan.
So I love that you're obsessed. This is the thing.
I love them.
When I got offered it, I was instantly like, all I want to do is make the fans okay and happy. And it came through this really chance meeting, what's called a general meeting in our industry, where you sort of meet up with a director or a producer and there's nothing necessarily on the table. You're just generally sussing out each other's vibes.
That's intense.
It was intense. And I had that meeting with Nia DaCosta, who directed our film at the beginning of the lockdown. And we connected over like Jane Austen and like English literature. We just like geeked out for about an hour and a half. And at the end, it was like, well, we don't know if our industry's ever coming back. You know, what is this COVID thing? Yeah. We can't really do what we do unless we're in close proximity to each other.
Humans.
So we're probably going to be the first industry to go. So.
Right, so it was like right at the beginning of it, right?
Yeah, right at the beginning. So we said, if we see each other on the other side of this, let's collaborate. And then she offered me this role in this film. Oh, and so I got this call. And it was like the night of the storm on the Capitol.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was watching this unfold in the news. And I was like, oh, my God, this is one of the most horrific things I've ever seen. And then this unknown American number started calling my phone. I was like, do I know someone in the Capitol building? Is someone I know
calling
in trouble?
For help.
Why are they calling me? Surely they know I can't help. Oh, God.
What will I do?
I was like, if I pick up, I'll be implicated in something.
Right. Am I an insurrectionist?
Am I? Yeah,
am I there? What's
going on? Exactly. Is it Trump? What's going on? Why me?
I can't help you, Donald.
Why me?
It's too late.
But actually, it's the director.
It was my team of sort of agents that when they call you, a weird American number comes up. So they were like, Nia DaCosta's got this thing she wants to talk to you about. I was like, okay, great. What is it? Is it like the little movie, you know, sort of the indie film that we talked about? And they were like, not so much. And then Nia, said, I want to offer you the villain in Captain Marvel.
Are you the villain?
Zoe! Are we surprised,
Andrew? No, I'm not villain.
But how fabulous.
What are you called?
And it has been fabulous. Her name is Darben, and she's been gender switched from the comics to the film.
You're gonna love it.
I'm like, it's beyond excited. You are getting a little feverish.
The look, you're gonna be gagged.
This
the
is so good.
This is gag
huge
worthy.
For her.
Really? Yeah, it's great. But again, it was so out of the blue. It's not something that I had been pursuing, like thinking about. And like the way that you get a role as an actor is always the way that the job goes. Right. It's so weird. If you have to really like fight for something, you get there on set the first day and you're like, oh, Jesus, why should I fight for this? It's really difficult.
Yeah, why should I want to do this?
I should have just let Kate Winslet do this. This is stressful. Darling, I wish I didn't fight. No one likes me. They're looking at me like I shouldn't be here. I fought tooth and nail to be in this room. Anyway, so that's like one version. And then sometimes you get this surprise, like come and do this thing that you weren't expecting. And so you turn up on set like, hi!
Yeah. I never really saw that. Yeah, like I haven't been chasing this. This is just coming.
Yeah.
Amazing.
This is a massive surprise.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to make the most of it.
What's a Marvel set like, Zoe? Is it like Hendon?
Tell me. Tell me like you went to Los Angeles.
It's exactly like
no. No. I don't want to do this to a fan. I mean, hear this.
It's too much fourth wall being broken
yeah,
here for me.
It's actually fucking broccoli. No, where was it filmed?
We film at these lovely studios called Pinewood Studios, where all the legendary people have been through.
But it's a big situation. It's Marvel.
It's big. It's blue.
So
sometimes
scary.
Green.
That's a bit weird, isn't it? So because you're constantly fighting a sort of saber-toothed, seven-headed, weird beast thing sort of thing.
That.
Yeah.
So the reason why it was scary, which is a reason that I didn't think about super later. Yeah. Oh, it didn't work.
And then you're like, oh, shit, I'm on a Marvel film set.
In the spaceship, okay. And on my first day, I was literally, felt like I was doing the longest scene that's ever been written in Marvel history. It was like pages long. I thought this was supposed to be really like quick fire, you know, quite soundbitey. It was supposed to be like
sort of monologue.
Cool line, stance,
cool line,
and you're out.
Look great,
yeah,
leave.
This is like a play. I was like, I'm back on Broadway, but it's Marvel. Okay, how do we do this? And I had to basically like walk up a space mountain in space. So there's this huge pile of rubble surrounded by this blue screen. And I have this weapon, this fantastic universal weapon, which is essentially a very big hammer. And I'm like, how do I do? Like the cameras are rolling. And
what,
I'm
like a Thor, like Thor's hammer.
Is it like Thor?
It's more slender.
Wait, hang on. Okay. Isn't Tom Thor?
No,
he's
Loki.
He's Loki.
Thank you, Mum.
Don't ask her, ask me. She might be had a baby with him. I'm the one with the details, right?
Excuse me, he's Loki.
Excuse me, I'm the expert here.
Okay, so it's a different... Wow, so this I'm kid walking, has got two quite interesting...
Oh, my God.
Like, that's Marvel pretty cool.
Start saving for the therapy bill there. So walking up this space mountain...
Of course.
I'm literally like... I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing. Do you know what popped into my head? Ooh. Rafiki from The Lion King.
Oh,
I was like, who's the last person I've seen like walk proudly with like a staff?
Yeah.
It's Rafiki.
And Rafiki does it brilliantly.
So I'm walking up the mountain.
Giving it Rafiki.
I'm like, okay, now I'm at the top of the mountain. I need to walk over here. I need to break open like an ancient catacomb. Sure. How do you do that? Do you raise your arm high? Is it a low down thing? Are we kind of going in?
Where is the door of a
catacomb? Going at the side? Where is the door of a catacomb? No one's explained this to me. This is captured on camera. We could look at the outtakes if we wanted to at some stage in my career. And I was like, okay, open the catacomb. I'm like, oh, now I have to rummage in the debris of the catacomb to find a magic bangle.
Right.
I have to put on the magic bangle and then have to do what I think might happen when you put
a magic bangle on.
And also the debris seems to have been made from like a really expensive cat litter, which is basically filling my lungs and airways.
Can't breathe, it's fine, carry on, be cool.
Get to the next bit where, I get blasted and I have to like, you know, shoot a laser back. Oh yes, and then the hammer was supposed to hover, but no one had really worked out how it was supposed to hover. So basically, I had to like give it to this poor, I shouldn't be giving these secrets away.
No, come on.
Anyway, there was a lovely young man and he had to dress head to toe
green screen
lycra.
Stuff. Yeah.
He didn't bank on that being his day. Basically, like worming along,
making it hover
towards wherever I end up standing, like a little green worm, to catch the hammer whenever it needs to be hovering. And it didn't always work. Sometimes it fell on my head.
I mean, you're just the magic, Sally. The magic.
It's important to keep the magic somewhat alive.
It's also worth saying this was all happening the day Kevin Feige visited set.
Who's that?
So, the head of Marvel.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes,
so he's watching the monitor, just watching me just like...
wandering about.
Like completely kind of like asthma attacked by the...
Cat litter.
The hammer falling on my head, the bangle flew off down into this cavern at one point. But I just must have been thinking, get this girl out of my set.
But this is a moment where you go, my career's taking me somewhere I've never been. Why would you know what to do
with a hovering hammer?
You wouldn't. Mm. And that is where the pleasure of that job came. Inner child healing.
Yes.
Can we see? Can we get a picture of Zowie?
I want to see this powerful bitch.
There's the hammer.
Excuse me. Look at the fit. Hello.
Okay, so I feel like if you get up in the morning and they do that to you and you get that, by day four, you're like, let's do this.
But that...
I'm feeling the shoulders.
That was the process. Oh, I know. The hair, makeup,
this is
costume.
God, it is a bit of a moment.
Stunt team. Nice. You actually look like this.
You look amazing.
Oh, my God. And actually, you're going to be like flying through the air. And there's something incredible about within your career becoming a superhero of any kind.
Getting in there, getting trained up.
Yes.
Getting really strong, really powerful.
Oh, amazing.
It was a huge opportunity that I always thought, you know, like you with your skip school, you're like, oh, I'm not really a mover. I was never encouraged at school. Do you know what I mean? You just basically walked up to... tennis, you know, what's it even called?
Well, I love that you remember that I started skip school, but that's now ropes.
But I messaged you when I got the job and said, can you send me that packet?
I didn't know.
But I couldn't have told you.
She said, can I get one of those skipping ropes? I was like, yes, all right, soon. Yeah, whatever.
So to get ready for Marvel.
As part of my Marvel training. That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
One thing we do say with ropes is, because we go to schools now, we're basically trying to get like as much of the country skipping as possible. And we're starting with schools. We're going to go into community centres, old people's homes, the whole country. And one of the things we've realised is that like there are so many sports, not exercise, sports that young kids who are either skint or black or brown or Asian feel that they're not able to do, don't have access to and are told is not for them. Yeah. Tennis, squash, badminton. There's something about a racket.
Yeah.
And obviously, I wanted to play all these sports when I was a kid. My mum couldn't afford things like a racket and like balls. You were just told there was equipment.
Yeah. Racket. We need to get shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're money for rackets, darling.
So what I say with ropes is that this rope is not just a skipping rope. It's a portal to all the other things you can do once you start jumping up and down.
Absolutely.
And I really do think that is it, when you said like, we're not told that it's true. Why don't we have any black tennis players? Why is there still only one or two? Because they don't give us a racket. They give us a ball. And we're allowed to play team sports.
Yeah.
And that's where we've always had openings. But, and of course, we're allowed to run. We're allowed to run and hunt with them.
Yeah.
But we can't just be a solo athletic star.
But you have to be so incredibly...
Sorry, of course you can. We can do anything. But this is what I'm trying to do with ropes. Yeah. To say, not only don't hide where you're from and who you are, get as fucking close to it as possible. Because I promise you, it will be... so valuable in what you do in the world. The closer I got to myself, my mom, my family, my ends, West London, Grove, the career I've had, everything, that's when everything started to flow. That's when the Makita Sons began.
Well, maybe I should be holding out for mine, because that physical alignment is exactly, as you're saying, the thing that sort of transformed my life more
it really
than
does.
The film itself. Like, that process was huge. And interestingly, they had been looking and looking and looking for a stunt woman for me. They couldn't find anyone. Women of colour are not entering into this world. And we really need them to.
I'd like to be a stunt woman.
Because you absolutely could. There'd be people for you to stunt.
But hang on, what does that mean?
I could be Viola Davis.
Viola Davis's stunt woman.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd have to get a little stronger. She's quite muscly, but I could do that.
You might need a little bit of training.
I'd like to be a stronger.
We're very much from behind. But
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. We're not.
But what does that mean for black and brown and Asian actresses that do, if there aren't stunt people available, they just have to do their own stunts?
You have to do sometimes more than you might otherwise.
What I mean. Did you like doing it, though?
I loved it.
I mean, I don't think I'd like someone else to do it for me. I mean, obviously, some of the very dangerous shit.
You want to do your own stunts?
Well, because I'm a bit Action Jackson.
In my head. I can tell.
She is. In my head. I am quite, I call myself a ninja. I am also.
At Christmas. And I'm also,
yes, please carry that for me. Yeah. So there's kind of constant battle. There's a duality happening. I'm a bit like, I'm quite tired of like a nap. Also, I just put my testosterone on.
It depends what hormonal patch.
I do that to Garfield every morning. I'm like, I just put my testosterone on.
She's like, the
you're an idiot. Shut up.
Please take some before seeing the film.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I think at the end
I
you're
take it every
be
day.
Fly kicking the door every out of the cinema.
Day. Every
how
day.
About that? Big hit of hormones and a big hit of testosterone and we go see.
I'm there. I will call you afterwards. God, I am going to wrap us up. Because, and I say this with love to both of you, this is the longest
time. And we've never been so like, I don't want to stop.
Also, I'm not really ready to end.
I'm still eating my mashed potatoes.
I've still got shit to say.
Right? Food to eat.
But I think we've still got food to eat. Look, I mean, there's a whole bowl of mashed potatoes with crispy skins on the top.
We're going to give you Tupperware for family, boyfriend, baby.
Thank you. This is the longest we've done with anybody, and we're not done. But here's to all the Sanses, the Zoe Sans, the Makita Sans, the Andy Sans.
The Andy Sans. To the Renaissance women.
In
to
it.
The Renaissance women.
In it. Look at
thank
that.
You.
One last soundbite. So they're right.
Yeah,
that
we really
was
ran
the
over.
Longest podcast.
Why do you think that there was so much to discuss?
For you two, there's a shared recognition of how the world has been with you in it and the work that you've both done. I think you share a sensibility. And this is also a lesson in not deifying people, not making them into gods and goddesses, actually, because you are also a god and a goddess yourself. You know, we're all kings. We are all masters and mistresses of our own universe. That's and we really are the universe contained in our chest. I mean, I just can't stop with the magic today.
I know. What is it with you just and the magical sound bites?
Falling out my mouth.
Sally Ashton, I will always be thankful you came around this table. And
it
this
was great.
Is just the beginning.
Just the beginning.
Just the beginning.
So much more to discuss. So I want to say thank you to Zoe. Thank you to Anna Sher. I think a raise a glass to the good lady one more time, because what she's given us through her students, you know, the beautiful people and the beautiful work that they have produced because of that one woman's spirit and intellect. Goodness me. What
goodness
a brilliant
me and good
woman.
Work.
Good work. Zoe, thank you.
Thank you.
What a star. What a beauty.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.